Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Uncovered, a true crime podcast. My name is Lily.
And I'm Emma.
Okay. Anyways, I know what y'all may be thinking right now, but Emma, you said the next episode would definitely have Lily. And I know what I said, but I'm sorry. If you've been around since we've started this podcast, you know that there's no order to anything. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what's going on at any given moment, but that's okay. But what you guys do get today is my husband Silas.
Yay. Woo.
Yeah, his name's not Emma.
Last resort right here.
Yeah, the joke is that he's our backup.
It was me or Isla.
That's our daughter who she's here right now. She's just not exactly
in spirit.
Born yet.
Yeah.
She just can't talk. She can fly a plane, though. She's very talented. Guess how long it's been since we posted a regular episode?
Like a month and a half.
It's been since September.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah. Don't talk.
I told you we should make a schedule.
We've tried to make a schedule. We can't stick to a schedule. It'd be different if this was like our full-time job.
You both could definitely stick to it if you really wanted to, though.
I think we've tried it before.
No, you definitely could.
Okay.
Housekeeping. Housekeeping.
Housekeeping. Okay. Today we're going to be... Actually, hold on. No, I feel like we always have business to attend to that we don't. Anyways, I don't know if y'all have heard, but we do have a Patreon. You get a bonus episode every month if you go join the Patreon. And you also get all of the episodes before that. I've heard it called like a backlog.
The whole library.
Yeah, you get the whole... bonus episode library, basically. So you don't have to just like subscribe and then wait for the new ones after you subscribed. You get everything before. Unlocking,
which right now is how many?
What's how many?
How many are in the library right now? Like
this is like a solid five.
Four. Yeah. We have how many tiers?
We have three tiers.
Three tiers.
Tier one.
Did it?
No. Tier one. I'm really proud of the names. So yeah. Let me talk about
that. Sorry, go ahead.
Tier one is basically a detective.
Ooh.
Tier two is let's start a cult.
Wow.
And tier three is the husband did it.
Classic.
Mm-hmm. My personal favorite is tier three.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun over there. You guys can like comment on posts that we make and then we get to interact with you guys.
Suggestions for the monthly episode as well, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I need to start doing that again, actually.
Yeah.
But like I said, we don't know what's going on.
Putting some suggestions there.
Yes. You can leave episode requests. There's also a Facebook group. It's not
so
very
much fun
popping yet because we don't have that many people, but that's why you should go join the Patreon.
And follow the Instagram account.
And follow the Instagram. Well, we do the shout outs at the end.
At
Uncovered the Pod, I think.
Yes.
I think. Anyways, okay. That's enough for my announcements. Silas, do you have any announcements or stories to talk about?
Nope. Never mind, I'll cut that out. Okay. Anyway, yes, I'm so happy to be doing this right now.
You sound like I'm holding a gun to your head. Yes, I am so happy to be doing this right now. Okay. Well, you jumped in on a pretty rough case here.
Uh-huh.
If I'm being totally honest, because we haven't have we really covered like a serial killer? I have. Yeah. Today we're going to be talking about a man or the devil named Angel Maturino Resendez. Resendez? How do you say that?
Let me see.
The his middle name.
Resendez?
Angel Resendez is what his name is. He's the spawn of Satan.
Wow.
Not a good time. So, quick trigger warning, sexual assault, murder, rape, graphic descriptions. This one's, it's just not going to be fun, guys. Mm. I mean, it's very interesting to talk about. Oh, he's also known as the Railroad Killer.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, he was all over Texas in the 90s.
Oh, I know he was all over Texas. But I think
San Antonio, like Bear County.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. It's our stomping grounds.
I know. So, he was born on August 1st, 1959. Mm-hmm. One source said 1960. I don't know and I don't care. In Puebla, Mexico.
Puebla.
No, it ends in an A. Puebla.
Puebla.
Puebla. Puebla.
Puebla.
There's really not much about his childhood. And what we do know is really depressing. He had a pretty sad life when he was younger. He was raised by a single mom who often physically beat him. And it sounded like they had financial issues on top of being physically abused. Oh, I did that wrong. Hold on. It sounded like they had financial issues because he was also partially raised by a different family member.
Oh, wow.
And on top of being physically abused, he was also molested by a pedophile and raped by his uncle. So.
No dad?
Yeah, nothing about the dad. Dad wasn't really in the picture. While going through this, he would roam around the streets of his town robbing.
Wow.
Burglary from a very young age. And he even took up sniffing glue at one point.
Wow.
How does one sniff glue?
It's basically the name. You sniff the glue.
But, like, what kind of glue is it, though?
I don't know. I've only ever used... no, I'm kidding. Like I've only ever heard of that happening with, like, plumber's glue. But I'm sure plumber's. You could do it with okay. most glues.
Because I was... Is it just, like, Elmer's glue? Like, if you sniff no, Elmer's glue
No, you have to sniff glue that, like... It's like the contact drying glue, the super serious
like
stuff.
Like Gorilla Glue?
No, not even Gorilla Glue, like the chemical stuff. The like serious glue.
Like the E6000?
Maybe. Plumber PVC glue.
Okay, I'll have to get me some of that.
That gooey stuff. That gooey goodness.
this is interesting to me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you know this because you're not very, very into true crime like no. I am. But a lot of serial killers or just murders in general had some kind of traumatic brain injury when they were younger that they were never like treated for and it wasn't paid attention to. And this is total speculation on my part, but there's one testimony of other kids his age jumping him for no apparent reason and beating him so bad that he bled through his ears.
Ooh.
Which makes me wonder.
Yeah. Is that when it happened?
TBI on top of already being beat by his mom.
Yeah, and molested. That seems like a very common theme with serial killers.
Yeah. Yeah, just the trauma. But, you know, a lot of people go through much worse than this and turn out fine. And
oh, yeah. People. Yeah. So, not shifting blame.
No. Oh, yeah. No, for sure. Like everybody always says, feel bad for the kid, not the adult. So I do feel bad for little Angel because no child deserves that. Some sources say that he ran away at 12, others say 16. Mm-hmm. 16 sounds more realistic in my opinion and kind of lines up with the timeline better, but I couldn't find like a
definite answer.
Is it definitive or definite?
Definitive.
I think it could be both, right?
No, it's definitive.
I'm out of breath. I forgot to take my iron today. Anyways. When he ran away, he attempted to cross into Texas illegally, but was caught by Border Patrol agents. And this would not even be close to the last time that he ran into issues with the law, mainly at the border. Eventually, he found his way into the U.S. and ended up in St. Okay, is it St. Louis or St. Louis?
I think it's St. Louis.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's the St. Louis Arch.
But I've heard... Then when do you say Louis? Like, how do you know if it's Louis or Louis?
I think they're Someone spelled different.
No, they're literally spelled the same.
No.
Yeah. I promise you they're spelled the same.
Maybe it's like just an Italian thing where it's always supposed to be Louis, but we just say
Are
Louis.
You thinking of the Louvre? Like the...
No.
Okay.
I'm just saying maybe like Italian people always
it's
say
It's not
Louis.
Italian.
I think that name is.
I don't think it is. I
think Louis and Louis
Wait,
are like...
Wait, what state is that in?
I think Louis and Louis, it's like Jesus and Jesus. We're at St. Louis?
Yeah. Why do we not know this?
It's in Missouri.
Okay,
How
that's what I thought.
How to pronounce Louis?
It's French. No, you should look up St. Louis, like the town.
It's pronounced Louis.
Like the city is?
L-O-U-I-S. Well, this says the S is silent, but I think it's just an American just, pronunciation or an English pronunciation.
You know.
It's like I said, it's like...
Jesus and Jesus.
Yeah, even though it's actually Jesus, technically.
Technically, yeah.
But we all say Louis and Jesus. That's what it sounds like.
Okay, anyways, he ended up there working under a fake name at a manufacturing company. And in September of 1979, at the age of 19, he attempted to steal a car and assault someone in Miami, which somehow landed him, get this, with a 20-year prison sentence.
Dang.
But he served 6 and was deported back to Mexico.
And he must be, what, 21?
He's 25 now.
25 at this point?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because he worked at the factory. Okay, 25. Yeah.
And I'm sure you may be thinking, well, man, you had a good run, but I'm glad you were stopped and that you won't be returning to your life of crime.
Yep, that's exactly what I was thinking.
No. Not only did he come up with what I must call a genius plan of using the railroad and begin entering and exiting the U.S. as he pleased, like it was not an issue for him.
Hmm.
He would just hop on a car and then be in a different country, state, city at like any given moment.
Yeah.
This left literally no trail, no trace, nothing. He would hop off, commit his crimes, hop right back on, and then go wherever he wanted. Not really wherever he wanted, but wherever the train was going, but like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
He was so good at using the railroad system that he started making a business out of it to smuggle people across the border into the U.S., which is kind of impressive. Okay, he ran this business on kind of a weekly basis. He would smuggle people out, hang out in the U.S. for a little bit, get caught, get deported, and then just do it all over again. Like, he was literally living with no consequences.
Mm-hmm.
He was eventually arrested in Texas for false citizenship in 1988. Come to find out, this was actually 2 years after he committed his first murder, and served a year and a half of prison time. And right upon release,
a year and a half?
Not for murder.
Okay.
For false citizenship.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right upon release, he ended up in New Orleans, got arrested for having an illegal weapon, and served another year and a half. And upon that release, he went back to St. Louis, I think, to attempt to receive false Social Security payments, and served 3 more years for that. He's back in Mexico now, but not for long. He hopped the border again and decided to stick to small crimes like burglaries to keep under the radar. It was in New Mexico that he was caught breaking and entering into a home and served another year and a half upon release to be caught in a Santa Fe rail yard.
Wow, he's really getting his time in.
I know.
Starting young.
Like, he just literally doesn't care. And I know that it's not, like, insane crimes or anything, but you can see, like, a reckless pattern of just, like, not caring at all. And I don't know why the last two sentences were so light, because like, it's not his first offense. He's gonna, like, he has a pattern of doing this multiple times.
Yeah,
like, and why aren't we giving him
year and a half,
a bigger sentence, some kind of fine, something? Forensic psychologist Frank Lizzo even agreed, saying that Resendez knew how to play the system and was never punished severely enough for the crimes he committed over and over. John Douglas, our man, our favorite FBI boy. Do you know who John Douglas is?
No. Oh. Is he from U.S. Marshal?
No, he's like only the greatest FBI profiler to ever exist.
Oh, do we watch a TV show about him?
Yeah, Mindhunter.
Yeah, I know who he is.
Oh, I love John Douglas. I would die for him. Obsessed with him. I read all of his books. Yes. He had a lot to say on Resendez. His profile said, quote, while he fits the mold of serial killers such as David Berkowitz and the Boston Strangler, Resendez killed more meditatively for something he needed. Alcohol, drugs, a place to hide out, though usually money. He raped, but sex seemed almost secondary, according to former FBI profiler John Douglas. Oh, I'm sorry. I just copy-pasted a paragraph off of one of the articles I used.
Wow. What? This is just straight plagiarism.
No, it's not. I'm quoting something. I said quote.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's legal. He went on to call Resendez, quote, just a bungling crook, very disorganized, but one whose own disorganization worked well for him because his trail was haphazard, because he himself didn't know where he was heading next. This directionless, drifting form of operation kept Resendez inadvertently ever the more elusive. He has such a way with words.
Ever the more elusive.
He's just so, like...
Resendez.
He's just... So he gives... He serves
more elusive.
Can you beep that out?
What?
He's serving.
Oh. Yeah, I'll bleep it out. I love bleeping stuff because it just sounds so funny.
You'll have to bleep a lot of things at the end because I kind of go off at the end. It's going to be like, get your bleep together, you.
Yes. Bleep. Do it.
It's funny.
Pop off.
Another thing that John Douglas speculated on. Okay.
You can't stop thinking about your fat ass.
If you actually leave that in.
I'll just bleep the part where I say ass. That'd be funny.
That would be funny.
No, it's inappropriate. No,
yeah, because then somebody could think
for
that
the
you're
work.
Saying
fat.
Okay. John Douglas also speculated
that. I'm going to save that soundbite. Fat.
And then whenever we do episodes with you, we can go, it's Emma and... You need to, like, cut out all the parts of laughing, because it's going to get, like, so brutal a little bit. John Douglas also speculated that Resendez grew some sort of bitterness towards Americans, becoming angry at the population at large, because America represents wealth to many other countries, and he keeps getting kicked out of it over and over and over. So it's almost like if he is, like, he established the I can't have it, no one can mentality with the entire U.S. population. It's also speculated by Douglas that Resendez started killing in his early 20s, and there may be some crimes that we don't even know about. And they're still, to this day, not even 100% sure on the number of victims. And sadly, some of them are still unidentified. Like I mentioned earlier, Douglas described him as haphazard, which he argued worked in his favor. He went in with no plan, but because he was kind of a skilled burglar, he was able to scope out the place and judge which houses would give him trouble and which ones wouldn't. He was also wildly disorganized and would go in to commit his crimes with no weapons on him.
Wow.
Most of them. He would use bold. Whatever he could find.
Bold.
Which is just extra scary, in my opinion.
Whatever he could find.
Yeah, because like he would break into a home and he doesn't know what they have in there. He'd just find something.
You could swing a dead cat in here. You'd be bound to hit a weapon. What?
I don't even know what that means. Okay, he had a very specific MO. Do you know what MO means?
Murder logic. Murderous logic. MO?
MO.
MO?
MO.
Oh, I don't know what that means.
Oh, it means modus operandi. It's Latin.
Like mode of operation?
Yeah. Good job. Yeah. He can translate Latin. Dude, I literally can't breathe.
Let me read.
What?
Should I read?
No. Because I've already heard this.
I mean, you've already taken like 3 smoke breaks, so.
Not a smoke break, a breathing break. Let me live.
Whatever. You know what I mean.
Are you actually mad that I need to take a break to breathe?
No, not
really. I just don't want to sound out of breath. That's just so annoying.
Yeah, no, take your time.
Okay. He would stay... Okay, let me just start up.
Next time you need a smoke break, go and just work on some sound bites for us.
Okay. He had a very specific MO. He would stay near the railroads, which terrified neighborhoods near train tracks. This kind of put it into perspective for me. Like, my grandparents live right by a train track.
Ooh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and I can't imagine, like, how scary it would be knowing that there's somebody out there hopping off of train tracks into small little towns and neighborhoods.
Oh yeah.
And killing people.
It's terrifying.
He would use mainly bludgeoning as his way of killing his victims, although we do
bludgeoning.
Beating someone with an object.
Oh, just like a blunt object. Just
any object.
Wow.
Like I said, he would just go in and find any object.
Yeah. Like I said, you could swing a dead cat in here, you'd be bound to hit a murder weapon.
Like if he like not to be like gruesome or anything, but like he would probably use my Stanley cup next to me.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
I'd probably
let's not go there.
iPad. Or a book.
iPad?
A book. No, you're right, Stanley cup.
That thing's got some weight to it. Like a full hydro flask, that thing will hurt you.
Well, if it's full, it won't be full after you swing it, but yeah.
Well, a Stanley cup. Hydro flask, that'll keep the water in there though.
Yeah. It's terrible.
We're disgusting.
Yeah. What a waste.
We do end up seeing guns.
What a waste of film. Another shout out right there. Boo.
Can you like save them as like little things to throw
Booyah.
In?
Yeah, I just put them on the desktop and then wherever I want to put on there, I just drag onto the audio file.
Okay.
That's how I do the bleep.
Okay.
So exciting.
He would use mainly bludgeoning as his way of attacking his victims, although we do see guns here and there towards the beginning and towards the end of his career of crime. And throughout his murder career, out of his 16 to 23 victims that he killed, it's not exactly clear, we don't have an exact number, only one survived the attempted attack on her life.
Wow.
And barely. She actually ended up writing a book called Soul Survivor, and her name is Holly K. Dunn. We'll get into her story eventually. Wow. Because it's, she's a, oh, the story's going to break your heart. It's so sad.
Dang.
So sad. So moving on to the darker parts of this, his supposed killings.
The darker parts.
Oh yeah, that was just the background, buddy.
Oh my gosh.
His supposed killings began in 1986. These two are not verified, but he did confess them later to police in detail, which is why.
Why they're on the record.
Yeah. Okay, in 1986, allegedly, this isn't verified, but he did confess to them. He allegedly murdered a homeless woman and left her body in an abandoned farmhouse. Apparently, they had met at a homeless shelter and became friends. Like, they were described as friends by other people. And they took a motorcycle ride together, and on the ride, he said he felt that she, quote, disrespected him. So he took out his gun and shot her in the head.
Wow.
Because that's how you handle things when you feel disrespected by someone.
No, not really.
Well, that's how he did. Crazy. According to Resendez, she also had a boyfriend who he also murdered by shooting him.
Oh.
And he dumped his body in a creek between San Antonio and Uvalde.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like I said, it's not verified and it's quite specific. His little confession. These victims were also homeless, so I'm sure the police didn't take it quite as seriously as they could have. Which is possibly why they, like, didn't catch him sooner, maybe? I don't know, just a thought. 5 years later, in 1991, he would go on to kill a man named Michael White. This is when we see him start bludgeoning his victims instead of shooting them. And why would he kill a man named Michael White, you may ask? Not that there's a good reason to kill anyone, usually.
Isn't he, like... Doesn't he not like Americans?
Well, there's that. That's his, like, overall motive. That's speculated.
Was he white?
Was
it, like, a race thing?
No, because he was gay.
He killed Michael White because he was gay?
Yeah, because Michael White was gay. Like, when police later asked him, he was like...
That was it?
They were like, yeah. His direct quote. They were like, why did you kill him? And he said, quote, because he was a homosexual.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he beat poor Michael to death with a single brick and left him in front of an abandoned home.
What?
These first three are described as his, quote, warm-up murders, which sounds so icky.
That's terrible.
I know. If I didn't write that,
whoever
someone
named
else
that
did
didn't
it.
Do a very good job naming it.
Well, like, I think it was, like, a profiler who did that.
Oh.
Which, I mean, it sounds so gross and icky, but there's really no, like... How else are you going to put that?
Yeah.
Because it makes sense, but there's just no nice way of saying
it. Yeah.
We see his pattern of escalation start after these first three. It's like he got a taste for it and then just continued to make his crimes worse and worse and worse. Eventually, he starts to rape his victims. On March 23rd, 1997, a man named Jesse Howell was found bludgeoned to death next to railroad tracks in Ocala, Florida. Upon first glance, it looked like maybe he was just struck by the train or had fallen off and it was an accident. But upon one simple closer look, it would become very obvious that this was not an accident. Okay, upon first glance, it would look like maybe he was just struck by the train or had fallen off and it was some kind of freak accident. But one simple closer look would reveal that it was definitely not an accident. The detective that was there on the scene said that if he was struck by the train in any capacity, the trauma would have been much more severe, which is why they brought up, like, maybe falling off the train and, like, getting caught in some kind of way. On Jesse's... Ooh, did you hear that spit? That was a lot.
Just restart.
Okay. On Jesse's body was a barely identifiable baseball cap and broken glasses still on his face. At the scene, they found a brass and rubber coupling, which I didn't know what a coupling was, which is used to hook train cars together. And it did appear to have blood on it, so it was taken into evidence. Later, this would be identified as the weapon used to kill Jesse Howell. So like we talked about earlier, just using whatever he could find at the moment as his weapon. Upon further investigation, it was seen that Jesse was dragged by the cuffs of his jeans into the spot that he was left in. The motive of this was clearly not robbery, as Jesse had all his jewelry still on and some cash in his pocket. He wasn't identified right away, but they did find a wire receipt for money sent by someone named Wendy. They tracked down... They tracked this down and found that it came from Woodstock, Illinois, where police in that town were investigating the disappearance of a woman named Wendy Von Huben. And the wire receipt was from a woman named Wendy. And upon further looking, Florida police would come to find out that Jesse Howell was also a missing person. Turns out Wendy and Jesse had ran away together to get married, but ran out of money. Eventually, Wendy contacted her parents to send $200 to get home, and the money was sent and picked up, but the couple would never return.
Hmm.
Now we have an issue. Where's Wendy?
Sounds like he probably killed her and did something else with the body.
Dude, okay, see, I didn't see that coming. I thought she was going to get found. We'll get into her story later. Oh, but
sorry.
You're good. Stealing my thunder.
She gets found later.
I wish.
She shows up at home.
Kind of, no. No. Search parties were happening in the areas near the train tracks. Helicopters were going around everything. But there wasn't even DNA evidence of her on Jesse, who was her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of weird. They put up flyers for Wendy everywhere, but they made the mistake of putting Wendy's parents' phone number on the flyers. So, ooh,
that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, they received really f***ed up prank calls from girls pretending to be Wendy that led them nowhere.
Wow.
Yeah. We'll get into the rest of Wendy's story later, but now we're going to talk about the most heartbreaking murder in this case, in my opinion. Don't get me wrong, they're all horrid and heartbreaking, but there's just something about these two. I think you'll agree with me. They kind of remind me of us. In a way. Okay. 20-year-old Holly K. Dunn's survival and Christopher Mayer's murder. Quick note, in between Wendy and Holly K. Dunn's survival, it is suspected that Resendez beat a man named Roberto Castro to death with a piece of wood. He was never formally charged with this murder or confessed to it, but he is the leading suspect due to, like, being by a railroad, weapon of convenience, just, you know, the whole list.
All lined up.
I wrote in August of 197, so I don't
in know. August of the year 197. I want to say it was the 19, year of our Lord.
I want to say it was 1997, mm-hmm. I think.
Or 1979.
No, because that's like when he was like left Mexico. I said 1979 earlier.
So 1997?
1997.
You sure?
Yeah, yeah, because his spree was like 97 to 99.
Okay.
Yeah. He would hop on a train from Florida, where his last crime was just committed, the one that we just talked about, to Lexington, Kentucky, to just ruin lives, really. Side note, he was only 5'4". He's shorter than me, but I like he's like built.
He's got that short man syndrome, bruh.
Canceled. Canceled. I'm going to talk about Chris and Holly because if two people in this world were ever soulmates, it was Chris and Holly. Even the way they met, just listen to this. Okay, picture this. Chris and Holly are at a bar. They don't know each other yet. Chris walks up to Holly and says, "I like your toenail color," which in my opinion is kind of a strange compliment. And Holly thought that it was kind of weird too until she looked down to see that they both had silver nail polish on and were wearing Birkenstocks.
Oh, he's smooth with it. Isn't
that cute? I know. He's got the riz.
He goes to the bar with all the nail polish colors and then looks for someone's toenails.
He was just
painted.
Such a hippie. Like, if you look at pictures of him, he's got like the, not the puka shell necklace, but like, you know, the hemp necklace. He loved going to like festivals. He had his like reusable water bottle, wearing his Birkenstocks.
Just
kind of
like relaxing to reset a little bit.
He just seemed like such a cool guy.
Yeah.
He sounds cool. Personally, that interaction would be enough for me to be like, okay, when's our wedding? Because like I'm considering that a proposal. What are the odds? Chris and Holly got very, very close and began dating very quickly. They were perfect for each other, and everyone around them agreed, all of their friends.
So cute.
They were best friends, and I 100% believe they would have gone on to have, like, the happiest of lives together if an absolute rotting piece of garbage demon hadn't
short
gotten in the way.
Demon.
Yeah, nothing wrong with being short, guys, but he's a murderer, so I'm going to find
goblin.
Anything. Oh, my God, he's a... No, do you want to see what he looks like?
A goblin.
Don't say that.
I said go.
No, don't go to Google. How do I type on this? Oh, there we go.
You have to type google.com into the search bar before you can search
no,
something.
I don't.
Google.com, enter, and then it'll take you to a search bar in the middle of the screen.
No.
My grandma showed me.
He's just so slimy.
He looks like a greasy little rat.
Yes. Oh, he does look like a rat. Did you see that one picture? What?
What a little piece of human
dookie.
He looks like he didn't cook all the way. That's why he's so short.
Their story goes into much more detail, especially in her book, Soul Survivor. I didn't read it for this case.
But oh,
heard...
so she survived.
Yes.
Mm.
But Chris does not.
Poor Chris.
And she witnessed the whole thing.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah. I've heard her book is very, very good. I didn't use it for this episode, just some excerpts I could find from, like, interviews online and such. In August of that year, which I think is 1997, they were attending a friend's party at a bar when Chris suggested they go for a walk. Mm-hmm. So cute. They were walking and talking, having a great time. They sat down near the tracks to share a beer from Chris's backpack because college. Only problem is that they were walking along the railroad tracks. They agreed to head back to the party, so they turned around when a man stepped out from behind an electrical box and said, "Give me your money."
Ooh.
Holly described that even in the dark with just the light of the moon, she could tell that this man's were just, his eyes were just dark, like there's nobody there. They stayed very calm, very mature, level-headed people, offered their money, ATM cards. Holly even offered her car, to which he declined every offer, and she thought, this is really strange, he said he wants our money, why isn't he taking our money? It was at this point Holly saw that he had some kind of weapon, an ice pick or a really skinny knife.
Oh.
He held it to Chris's throat and shoved him to his knees and started going through his backpack. They were, at this point, they were just begging him to take the car and just leave them alone. They weren't going to tell anybody, just let us go. Resendez then tore the straps off of Chris's backpack and used them to tie his hands behind his back. He then took off Holly's belt and bound her using that. He dragged Chris across the train tracks to the other side, to which Holly followed, later saying, quote, "There was no way I was leaving Chris." They were then forced down into a drain ditch. Holly whispered, "Are you okay?" To which their attacker replied with, "Don't talk." He then ripped up a white shirt and gagged both Chris and Holly with it, but because Holly is a genius, she stuck out her tongue when he tied it so she could still talk. And Resendez walked away to the other side of the tracks for a moment, and Holly had been working on loosening her hands from the belt the whole time, and she got to a point where she could slip them out. Shook the gag out of Chris's mouth, and Chris said, "It's gonna be okay." Resendez came back holding something, a large rock. And before they had time to process what was going to happen, Resendez dropped the rock on Chris Meyer's head. It was like a boulder. It wasn't a rock.
Yeah.
Bad time to say this, but it's not a, what does SpongeBob say?
It's not a boulder.
It's a rock.
It's a terrible time to say that. You piece of
Did I say Myers? Chris Mayer's head. Oops.
Wow.
Whatever. Okay. Holly heard gurgling noises coming from him, so she asked very kindly, "I think my friend is gurgling. Can you turn his head to the side so he doesn't choke?" To which Resendez responded, "You don't need to worry about him. He's gone."
Wow.
Before Holly had time to realize the severity of the situation and the fact that her boyfriend was just murdered in front of her, Resendez began taking off Holly's jeans while she screamed and kicked in an attempt to fight him off. To try to shut her up, he stabbed her in the neck with the ice pick he had from earlier, saying, "See how easily I could kill you?" Holly was in survival mode at this point. She just completely shut down and described it as if she was watching herself from above, refusing to feel anything and only pay attention to details about this man so she could take mental notes and repeat them later on, hopefully. She noted the shape of his face, tattoos on his arms, the glasses he was wearing, and the shape of his nose. She'd even dug her fingernails into the ground to leave DNA in case her body was moved somewhere else. And after the rape was done, she knew she needed to try to, like, use some kind of relationship with him to not be killed. She told him her name was Sarah, and that she had a family who cared about her, that if he let her go, she wouldn't tell anybody about this. This is when he began beating her in the head with a piece of wood. She was drifting in and out of consciousness, and then she heard him walk away. Before she passed out, as she was fading, she's a baddie for this one, she recalls the only thing she was thinking was, "You left me alive and I'm gonna get you one day." She doesn't know how long she was out for, but when she woke up, she was covered in blood, like head to toe in blood. She got up and stumbled to the nearest house she could find with the lights on and just walked into their door, and she was covered in so much blood. She's blonde. And the person who, like, owned the house that she walked into said that they thought she had red hair because there was so much blood. A man was studying when she walked in, but she couldn't talk because she had a broken jaw.
Ooh.
She was stumbling around, could barely even get the word "help" out. This man was very, very scared, obviously, but he did call paramedics immediately, thankfully. And even with all of this, Holly's next request after help was, quote, "My boyfriend's out there, you need to get him." She was taken out of the house and assessed by doctors at the hospital, and get ready for her list of injuries that she somehow still walked to somebody's house with. She had a broken jaw, broken eye socket, deep gashes in her head and scalp, and a stab wound to the neck.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Her family came to her side in the hospital, and they informed her of Chris's passing. She stayed 5 days in the hospital to recover and have a surgery on her jaw, and sadly, Chris's funeral happened before she was discharged, so she wasn't even able to attend.
Wow.
Somehow, after all this, she returned to college, like, living on campus, even after all that trauma. And 18 months later, she would receive a call that would change her life, but we're now going to go back to chronological order in the sequence of murders that were committed after this. So that was in August. It was August of 1997 that Chris was murdered. So then he takes quite a long break. We don't see any crimes in between, a little over a year, actually. So fast forward to October 4th, 1998. I'm sure he was out there committing petty theft and things.
Yeah.
In Hughes Springs, Texas, to a small railroad town where a woman named Leafy Mason lived. She was a poet. She lived alone in her little brick house, and she was 87 years old.
She sounds so cute.
I love Leafy. This was a small town. Everyone was chill with each other, and Leafy was just a part of the community, just like the grandma figure, you know? Local police received a phone call asking for a welfare check on Leafy after she had missed picking up a friend from a nearby nursing home. This was not like her. Apparently, you could ask anyone who knew her, and they would say she was quite the punctual person, always early, never late, and she could not stand people who didn't respect others' time.
Ugh, so, I'm with you, Leafy.
I know, right? So this was obviously very concerning.
Bars.
People also described her as demanding and outspoken, but in an endearing way. She was the local character. Randy Kennedy, the local police chief, hurried over to Leafy's home to where he found her bludgeoned body on the ground in the back bedroom with a blanket laid over her and an antique fire iron covered in blood on the floor near her with the window to the bedroom open.
Oh,
I forgot to mention. So Leafy was found with a blanket laid over her. And when he left Holly, he thought she was going to die or was already dead. And he covered her with a piece of plywood. So he has a habit of, like, covering people after.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was a complete side note. Back to Leafy. This obviously terrified the small community, and people began worrying that it was someone in their own town who had done this, because this was just barely when law enforcement communities began to theorize that these murders were too similar to be coincidences.
Wow, good job, guys.
I mean, honestly, I will give them credit, though, because eventually, like, police from all over the country actually joined forces instead of being like, we don't want to talk to you, which is a common occurrence. Police across the country began making connections between these murders, and profiling is so impressive to me because they started to speculate that it was someone who was hopping the U.S.-Mexico border, hitchhiking on trains, murdering people, using weapons of convenience. Every murder was overkill, and every body had been covered by something after the attacks. This community was able to get in touch with the police community who was talking about this, was able to get in touch with Kennedy in Hughes Springs, where Leafy was murdered, after news broke of what had happened. Luckily, Officer Kennedy was very on top of things, considering how small the town was and how often he did not have to deal with this type of thing. He was able to collect evidence from the crime scene, most notably a partial palm print left on the window. So when the time would come, the other police chiefs from around the country would be able to use the palm print Kennedy had collected. Sadly, Resendez would go on to strike again on another senior citizen named Fanny Whitney Byers, who was 81 years old, on December 10th of 1998, only 2 months after the murder of Leafy Mason. He rode the train to Carroll, Georgia, and I couldn't find much information on this, so I don't know details, like if she lived alone and stuff like that. Her house was near the CSX Transportation Railroad tracks, and she was found dead in her home, bludgeoned to death with a tire rim. Two other people were actually charged with this murder, but Resendez confessed to it during an interrogation later down the road.
That's right.
Side note to say, because I just realized I didn't even put all of his earlier crimes in. Like, I know I talked about a lot. Like, fake documents and stolen cars. But there's, like, a laundry list of just, like, just crime after crime after sentence after crime after getting deported again after just, it's, like, we wouldn't have time to fit them all in.
Yada, yak, yak,
those yak. Are just the ones that he was caught for.
Yak, yak, f***ing yak.
Getting back into it, a week had gone by since his last alleged killing of Fannie Whitney Byers that he did confess to, but like I said, somebody else was charged for it, so like I couldn't find a lot of information on it. I'm really confused. Anyways, about a week had gone by since that killing, and this is when he chose to break into Claudia Benton's home in Houston, Texas, on December 17th, 1998. Sadly, her home was near the Union Pacific Railway, which, as we all know, just did not end well for people. She worked as a pediatric neurologist at the Baylor College of Medicine and was quite successful. She was a baddie, and she was only 39 years old. Her body was discovered when a worried coworker called police asking for a welfare check because Claudia had not answered any phone calls and wasn't coming to the door either. This was not like her to miss work unannounced, so police came and checked the property for signs of forced entry. There were none, but the garage was unlocked, so they opened it to find that the door to the inside was open and jewelry was scattered everywhere. The place was an absolute wreck, but they still hadn't seen anything too awful on the first floor of the house until they went upstairs and stumbled upon the doctor's brutalized body on the second floor. She was stabbed repeatedly, raped, and beat to death with an antique statue that was in her house. And this is side note, but like, how eerie is it that something that you bought to like make your house look nice would end up being like what killed you?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I know, like, how weird is that? It's
a very weird thought.
I know. After DNA came back, police contacted Holly. You remember Holly, right? Holly, to tell her there was a match for DNA evidence found in her case, and that at this point, this person was a suspected serial killer. This obviously made Holly want to shit her pants, just like it would anybody, so she fled to the UK in fear of him finding her. 6 weeks later, she got another call saying that he had surrendered himself and she felt comfortable enough to go back home. But that's later on down the line. Oh, I thought you were glaring at me.
Yeah.
The last murder that had taken place in this town was over a decade before this, during the robbery of a pharmacy, so you can only imagine what police were thinking looking at this scene.
Yeah.
Police luckily found her stolen and now abandoned Jeep Cherokee in San Antonio, and Resendez left his fingerprints all over it, and they were able to get a match. At the time of this murder, there was already a warrant out for his arrest for burglary, but nothing for murder yet. I don't know if he knew that he left too much evidence and just laid low for a little bit, but he took a break from killing. He didn't strike again until May of the next year in Weimar, Texas?
Let me see.
W-E-I-M-A-R.
Weimar.
Weimar?
Weimar.
You ever been there?
Weimar.
You ever been there?
Probably.
Actually, yeah, you have, because it's literally on the road that you take to get to Houston.
It's Weimar.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I said.
Weimar. But I know there's going to be people in the comments like, it's pronounced Weimar, actually. It's actually pronounced Weimar.
I've never understood why people get so picky about like pronunciations of things.
Yeah.
So.
Unless it's New Braunfels. Then you can shut the fuck up.
Or Bowern.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm going to Bern. Or Belverde.
Bolverde.
Bolverde.
Ugh. Die.
Or what else?
Gruen.
Groon.
So he didn't strike
again. What page are you on?
11 of 13.
Nice. We're doing good.
I know. Okay. He wouldn't strike again until the May of next year in Weimar, Texas, when he brutally murdered husband and wife Norman, who went by the nickname Skip, and Karen Cernick. So Skip and Karen. And I stumbled across that it was his birthday when he was killed, actually.
Wow.
Skip was the pastor/reverend of the United Church of Christ. Everybody loved him. He was a great pastor, great friend, great neighbor. I haven't read one negative thing about him. He was beloved by his wife and the church that he led. It was on May 2nd that their bodies were found in their home, which I believe was directly behind the church.
Mm.
And just like almost every other victim, they were bludgeoned to death, this time with a sledgehammer.
Oh. Jeez.
Yeah. The congregation realized that something was awry because they didn't show up to church that Sunday, and Skip was the pastor, so that was kind of a weird thing.
Yeah.
Just like Claudia Benton, Resendez stole their Mazda and drove it again to San Antonio just to abandon it, left fingerprints all over it again, and wow. This is how they got a match for the fingerprints left in Claudia Benton's car.
Dumb.
Dude, right? Fast forward a month, Resendez murdered 26-year-old elementary school teacher Noemi Dominguez on June 4th, 1999 in Houston in her home with a pickaxe.
Jeez.
And a week later, her stolen car was found by state troopers all the way over in Del Rio this time.
Wow.
Yeah. On the same day...
You mean El Rodeo?
Yeah, my bad. You mean Jalisco?
Yeah.
On the same day, I believe it was on his way from Houston to Del Rio. I looked at a map, and it's, like, on the highway that you take from Houston going west. Hold on. What did I say? Like I said, Weimer's, like, right on the road to get to Houston from, like, San Antonio. And then he stopped on his way back from the murder of Noemi and stopped in Weimer again, close to where the Cernics were killed. And he murdered 73-year-old Josephine Convica in her farmhouse near where the Cernics were. So with the same pickaxe that he used to kill Noemi, probably just hours earlier. He attempted to steal her car but could not find the keys. This is really interesting. So he's really escalating, like, back to back to back. And around this time, Osama bin Laden was bumped out of the FBI's most wanted list and replaced with Angel Resendez.
What year was this?
Wait, yeah, that wouldn't line up. This had to be after
2002.
2001.
Yeah, 2000, sorry.
2001, babe.
Yeah.
That's a good question, actually. Because he was caught in... or surrendered.
I don't think Osama bin Laden... Was he known before 9/11? He must have been.
I think he was, but he wouldn't be on the FBI's most wanted list.
He could be.
That's true. Hold on. When?
We don't negotiate with terrorists. Do these headphones make your ears hurt?
No.
Dude, my ears hurt so bad right now.
Really?
Yeah. Where's her soul? Where's her mind?
I wanted to say it was in 99 that he was moved. Yeah, this was in 99.
When was bin Laden...
on FBI's most wanted...
discovered. 1999, the FBI placed Osama bin Laden on its 10 most wanted fugitives.
Oh, okay, so that does add up.
Because there were some attacks in 1998.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways, this dude was bad enough to bump bin Laden off the list.
Yeah.
For a little amount of time.
It's crazy.
I know. So, his face was blasted across TVs, radios, flyers... just everything. It had detailed descriptions of him, including visible tattoos, scars, height, everything. A picture of him and his ugly little face. They included that he went by many aliases and had different documents showing different birthdays and such. Just in case people were like, oh, well.
Aliases include Rat King.
He went by Raphael a lot.
Raphael?
But Rat King is a good name.
That's Theo Von's nickname.
Really?
Yeah.
I love Theo Von.
Return of the Rat Tour, baby.
Yeah, and this is funny to me. This is such, like, a Southern thing. Police forces in Kentucky were handing out wallet-sized photos of his face because they wanted to catch him so bad. Because that's where Chris Mayers was murdered in Kentucky. And so all over Kentucky, people just had, like, wallet-sized photos of Resendez in case they saw him.
That's pretty smart.
I know. So, as you can see, he's just escalating crazy fast. Two in one day. What?
That's crazy.
That's, like, Ted Bundy... type beat.
Two in one day.
Yeah. It seems like he's in a frenzy almost, like trying to steal another car, like 2 hours into his drive in another stolen car. I don't know. It was just a lot. And just a short 2 weeks later, he murdered an 80-year-old man named George Morber in Gorham, Illinois this time.
Wow.
Which I, like, why is he going for senior citizens? Like, imagine living, like, a long, happy, healthy life. Like, you still got years ahead of you. And this dumb just comes in to, like, for why?
Yeah, that guy made it so far and then...
Yeah, and he was taken out by just this out
by a rat.
A little 5'4" rat.
Yeah, he probably had a rat tail and everything and he probably went...
He literally looks like he bites ankles.
Yeah, ankle biter. A real ankle biter this fellow was.
Yeah. This is when his pattern, like I said, we've seen him, like, escalating. But this is when you see him kind of just, like, lose it entirely because of bludgeoning someone, or George in this case, he shot him in the head with a shotgun in his own home, which was only 100 yards from the railroad tracks. Resendez then stole his pickup truck and abandoned it 60-ish miles south of Gorham where the murder took place. Again, he's a sloppy f***, left his fingerprints everywhere, and this positively identified him as the murderer. Don't say that.
Sorry.
So on the same day, he ended up also killing 52-year-old Carolyn Frederick by bludgeoning her to death with the shotgun he used to kill George Mormer.
Oh, my gosh.
He did it so aggressively that it actually broke the gun in two.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
does he target older people?
No, he doesn't have, like, a victim profile. That's the thing. Like, Kristen Hawley, college students. Michael White,
seems
on
like
the younger
the last
side.
Few that you described are a lot older.
Right, but, like, Claudia Benton, 39. Mm. And then, like, three or four of them were above
college
70.
Students, yeah.
Or 50. But this is really, really sad. Carolyn Frederick was George's daughter. She was just trying to stop by for a visit with her dad and was met with this asshole at the door. Apologies for how rapid fire all those murders were. I wasn't trying to focus on some victims more than others. It's just harder to find information about other victims. Mm-hmm. And if you do like read on murderers and stuff, it's kind of an issue where like if some killer has like a long list of victims, some victim stories are like focused in way much more detail than others.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
I'm sure it's just all the information they have.
Well, yeah, but it's also, like, usually just, like, the most brutal ones end up being focused on. Or, like, Ted Bundy's case, like, not even like, the 12-year-old was focused on more. It was the... I'm forgetting. I can't think of anything. Dude, people weren't lying when they say that being pregnant literally kills your brain cells. Like, I can feel myself losing them.
You're dumb.
Dude, I feel so dumb.
Why?
Because I just can't, like, think. I forget things all the time. Mm. I feel like I can't form a sentence. Like, I can barely read. Anyways, like, I literally went to the loft today to... Oh, I shouldn't say that. That'll be, like, way too close. Anyways, I went to my old place of employment today to talk to my old boss. Uh-huh. Because I want to have my baby shower there.
Yeah.
And I literally went in for that sole purpose, and I forgot to, like, talk to her.
Just went and hung out.
Hung out and did my podcast stuff. I went there to do podcast stuff and to ask her.
Wow.
Yeah. But, I mean, I did end up asking her, but it was after I left the building and then went back around to the drive-thru to ask for more creamer in my coffee.
Wow.
That I happened to catch her and be like, oh, by the way. Yeah. Total side note. Anyways, if it was up to me, I would have loved to give as much information as I did for Kristen Hawley. And to keep this in perspective, he committed his last known murder less than 2 years since the murder of Chris.
Wow.
So all of that was...
rapid fire.
Like, literal rampage for 2 years.
It's crazy.
Now... taking a small break again before we get into the capture and surrender and all that, we may be wondering, what exactly was his motive? What was it, Silas?
Wondering.
Like, if you were to sit down and ask this dumb prick, why did you do this? What do you think he would say?
Because he doesn't like American? Not Americans. United Statesians?
No. He was an avenging angel that was sent by God to punish those who, quote, deserve to die.
Yeah. I don't know why I said some normal
right. Right.
I should have known.
Oh, keep that in, please. And usually when a killer says that, I'm like, yeah, okay, sure, buddy. But it later was proven that Resendez did have some major mental health problems involving delusions. Because at one point, when he learned he was receiving the death penalty, he simply said, quote, I don't believe in death. I know the body is going to go to waste, but me, as a person, I'm eternal. I'm going to be alive forever. Mm-hmm.
In hell.
Yeah, literally. He also went on to describe himself as half angel, half human, and told psychiatrists that he literally did not believe he could die.
Wow. I wonder if he was just playing insane.
No, because he was evaluated by some psychologists who declared him, like, not competent. He, like, was... not mentally.
Well, yeah, but the only test for that is what the words are.
Okay, but psychiatrists can tell when they're faking.
If you're a psychiatrist, fake being insane right now.
Huh?
Emma, do you feel like death is an option for you in life?
No.
Why not?
Because I'm an angel.
Yep,
no, dude.
She's insane.
It was two different, like, professional forensic psychiatrists.
They also used to recommend cigarettes back in the day, so...
I don't know. I trusted that he was not competent.
I feel like that even if they are incompetent mentally, that always becomes like a way out where people's...
Well, no, what I like about this is that he was declared not competent, but he still got the lethal injection. So.
Nice.
All of the posters and ads showing his face turned out to be what was going to catch him. His own sister, Manuela, saw his picture on the FBI's Most Wanted poster and called the police, worried that he might kill someone else or be killed by the FBI.
Good for her.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Agent named, I don't know his first name, but his last name is Carter. So an agent Carter got with Manuela and somehow arranged a meeting with Resendez, where his sister Manuela, two brothers, and a pastor got him to surrender himself.
Wow.
In a hearing, Resendez threw a shit fit, saying that Agent Carter had lied under oath, quote, and given him and his family the impression that he would be spared of the death penalty, which we found out wasn't true. Technically, he didn't lie because his fate would be decided by a jury in a courtroom, not FBI Agent Carter. This is kind of a bummer, but I understand where he's coming from. I did read that Agent Carter, when making his deal with Manuela, implied that he would be in a normal prison and they would be able to have regular visitations with him, which was most definitely not the case. So I really don't like that he lied to his sister because she's, like, helping them out here, but I also see, like, they wanted her to help them, so he kind of had to, like, I don't know. What's your take on that?
No take.
But do you see how I'm, like, kind of torn? Like, I get where he was coming from, but, like, I also, like, feel bad
for her. Yeah, but, like, if that was the only way to get them to bring him out, then...
Right.
If she's like, oh, I'm not turning him over unless we get to visit him regularly,
then
if she said that, then I'd be like, oh, yeah, every day. But you I don't think... a free pass whenever you want.
Yeah. I don't think she, like, implied that, though. I think he just felt like he needed to lie.
Yeah, I
do feel bad for her because... yeah, whatever. She ended up getting $86,000 for helping. Like, didn't even turn him in for the money, but ended up getting that much money. And I'm sure that no amount of money can help after discovering that your brother is, like, a brutal serial killer, but at least it was something, you know? I don't know. Like, I'm trying to find the... You know what? However she feels, I support her how she feels. This is one of the other things that bugs me about this. The only case that went to trial was for the murder of Claudia Benton.
That's all he needed, probably, to get lethal injection.
Right. You know? But, like, I don't know. Yeah, since it was one of the most brutal, like, killings that he had done, and the one... Can you not do that while I'm talking?
I'm just... Sorry, go ahead.
Jeez,
you.
Since it was one of the most brutal and one with the strongest amount of evidence linking him to the case.
Yeah.
Which I get, but, like...
I'm sure it was some weird legal thing where it's, like...
Right.
Bring the strongest one to trial, whatever, something like that. Yeah.
Usually they have to end up doing that because, like, if the evidence isn't strong enough, then the whole thing could be thrown out.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure it was something weird like that.
Yeah. But they had DNA evidence and, like, multiple. And they had Holly as, like, a witness, so I'm wondering why.
Yeah.
They only used hers. But whatever. Either way, you know, he's dead. So during his confessions, he confessed to the murders of Jesse Howell and Wendy Von Huben. But if you recall correctly, they never found Wendy or her body. He actually ended up leading investigators to the shallow grave he had put her body in after he raped, strangled, and buried her about 8 miles away from where Jesse was found. When asked why he did this, he said that Wendy and Jesse were, quote, anti-Christians who believed in witchcraft. Yeah.
Oh, Llewellyn.
Yeah. At the end of the day, when all is said and done, the jury found him guilty of first-degree murder of Claudia Benton, and he was sentenced to death by lethal injection. He was executed on June 27, 2006, a year before my sister was born. And before he was injected, he asked forgiveness from the victims' families and then said, quote, "You don't have to. I know I allowed the devil to rule my life." Which, two things. No lock. They don't have to forgive you. And I thought you were ordered by God to do this. Like, which one was it?
Yeah.
Was it the devil ruling your life, or were you following God's orders because you're an avenging angel for him? Make up your mind, you loser.
Yeah. Weirdo.
Dumb.
Idiot.
I was going to say that next.
Sorry.
Prick. Rotten toenail.
Arsehole.
Ooh, that was a good one. infected pubic hair, stretched out cankle sock,
urethra,
UTI.
You.
I hope that he's in hell and that he feels like he has a raging yeast infection and UTI.
You stupid devil.
Every second of every day.
Devil's pube beard.
Yeah. That's what his beard looks like. It's like pubes are growing on his ugly face.
Stupid f***ing crust-filled fingernail.
Ew. Infected ingrown toenail.
You pizza.
I hope he feels like he has an ingrown toenail and then he stubs his toe.
I hope he feels like his d*** is frozen and it could break off if he hits it too hard.
Yeah.
I hope he feels like he's giving birth through his butthole 24/7.
I hope he has hangnails all the time.
Yeah. I hope bleed. He chips his tooth.
But then can't get it repaired, so anytime he eats something cold, the nerves are just going
crazy. I hope
crazy.
His big toenail peels up and separates, but doesn't come off.
Ugh.
So he has to be like really careful with it for a couple weeks while it reattaches itself.
I hope he feels every single little bit of pain that he inflicted on other people in his life. He's dead.
Oh.
We're talking about in hell. So anyways, guys, that was the case.
What a wild story.
Angel Maturino Resendez. A.K.A. the Eye of Satan's butthole. Her eyes were plucked out.
Her nose was kind of...
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, guys, did we explain why Lily's not on this episode? Yes, we did.
Lily has a job and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it's not weird. She's just a working girl and she's busy like every night, so...
Yeah, poor thing.
I totally understand.
Me too.
Yeah.
But please come back, Lily. I hate doing this.
And it's only easy for me and Silas to record because we live together, so...
Yeah.
We're roommates.
It's not easy for me to record, though. I get the nervous when I'm put in front of the mic.
Did you shit yourself?
12 times.
Anyways, you can follow us on Instagram at
UncoveredThePod.
Or on TikTok at
UncoveredThePod.
No.
Cast. Uncovered Podcast.
I don't know what it is. I think it's The Uncovered Podcast.
The Uncovered Podcast.
Yeah. Follow us on TikTok at The Uncovered Podcast.
Emma uploads to all of those things every single day.
TikTok and Instagram?
No.
No, I don't. I should probably get better at that.
Yeah.
And best of all, go join our Patreon.
Woo!
Because
our tiers start at $3 a month.
But if you want the bonus episode...
And the entire backlog of episodes.
Yes, then you should subscribe to the Husband Did It tier.
Look at that.
Because it's so much fun over there. And the more Patreons that we get, the more we're going to be able to do this.
Yep.
And, you know, if you want more episodes, then share this podcast with your friends and family.
And if you don't want more episodes, then I think you're just a little butt cheek on a stick.
Yeah, and I think you're rude, and I don't like being bullied.
That's a bit much.
Bullies scare me.
I'll cut out all that and leave what I said.
No, if you don't... Like I said in that one episode, and if you don't like it, f*** you.
Yeah, if you don't like this, f***.
Period, queen.
Yeah.
What episode was that? Because that was a funny episode. I think it was the last one that we uploaded. Anyways, guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
This concludes the episode.
But I'm serious. I can't believe I haven't ever said this before, but share our podcast with your friends and your family.
Share the podcast.
Share
get the word
because,
out.
Because, you know, if you even, it's for you. Like, share it for you because the more listeners that we get, the more episodes we'll be able to do.
We don't have any money. We are very, very poor. And actually, we have a kid on the way.
Meanwhile, I'm posting baby clothes hauls every other day.
That's why we're poor. So
you were the one throwing shoes in the cart left and right.
We'll cut all this out.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I kind of like the wind down.
Yeah. Helps me relax after.
Because we did all the important things.
After a rough episode, honestly.
Dude, wasn't that bad?
Yeah.
Yeah. But she kind of stick.
Anyway. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening so much. We really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Share the podcast.
Send us an email.
Yep. I know you have some... up friends that love this stuff, so send it to them.
If you're a woman,
yeah,
you probably like this.
That's
so.
Sexist and also true.
I think it's the only time that being sexist is like acceptable.
What, women liking true crime?
Yeah, because it's such like a it's like a oh how I love being a woman moment, you know.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, all right, thank you guys for listening. Have a good one.